How easy is it to be happy, regardless of results? Well, one way is to look at the happiest nation on the planet. And that's what our guest does this week. By looking at them, maybe we can bring some of their practices into our own lives. This is the Thrive Podcast, the podcast that gives you the opportunity to, well, thrive. So welcome to the Thrive Podcast. We are delighted to be welcoming another great guest, writer, editor, broadcaster, and journalist, but somebody who's made a study of what we understand are the happiest nation on earth, the Finns, in her book, Everyday Sisu. We feel this is such a poignant and relevant topic for our audience as we seek to improve their mental health and wellness, of course. It is Katja Panzer. I hope I pronounced it correctly. Have I?
Yes, that's fine. That's absolutely fine.
Welcome to you. We're obviously delighted to have you. Look, I'm going to jump straight in. You've written and spoken about the Finnish way of life and the label Sisu. Can you give us an insight, really, in layman's terms or what have you? What Sisu actually is?
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here with you on your podcast. Essentially, I would say that Sisu, in a nutshell, very briefly, is a unique type of fortitude in the face of challenges, small and big. Of course, there is a much longer history and there's a lot of research. But the idea is that whatever challenges you're facing, and if we're talking, for example, in this context about mental health, physical health, extreme sports achievements, the idea is that whatever you're facing, whatever you need to deal with is you figure out the solutions rather than pulling the rug over your head, or I should say pulling a blanket over your head and not dealing with them, but also doing it in a way that is constructive and helps you move forward, and do it in a way that isn't destructive and pushes you too hard.
Interesting. I mean, look, I've studied, for example, a number of psychological fields, and one of them is NLP, for example, which is supposedly about modeling excellence. Your book is about, I guess, modeling happy people. So can you tell us how our audience can model happy people, I guess?
That's a very good question. And I guess one thing that I would say is that part of healthy Sisu is sometimes not actually pushing yourself to run the marathon, you know, realizing, okay, I need to go for a jog or a short walk or whatever it is. So in that respect, I think I'm not the perfect expert for you, in that it's more about finding the ways to work best for yourself, but also about the ways to not push yourself too hard and to realize, you know, sometimes we have a marathon in us, and sometimes we just have a short walk or a jog, or we realize we need to do something else because we're injured or we're emotionally completely overloaded. And a really good sense of Sisu is about, you know, you keep moving forward, but you also listen to your own needs and your own body and the things that you need to stay mentally and physically strong. So I think that it is about going for excellence, but in a way where you can redefine what excellence means, and that sometimes excellence means that it's okay to take a break, to say, I need help, to look at alternative ways to get where you want to go rather than just push, push, push.
Beautiful. And let's talk about the Finnish people for a moment, because I think it will help us to really understand the concept of Sisu much better. What makes the Finnish people so happy? What are some of the habits that they have that we could learn from?
Another really good question. I think one thing, I mean, I grew up in North America. So one of the things that has really struck me, and I also actually studied in the UK, is in North America and in the UK and in many countries, often well-being, fitness, extreme performance is associated with very complicated and expensive, you know, routines, personal trainers, equipment, access to the best coaches and the best trainers and all of that. And I have a huge respect for all of those things. And I'm not saying that they're not needed, but I think one thing that time and time again in studies has, and the data is there in the research, Finns are very closely connected to nature. There's one recent study said that almost every person living in Finland is within 200 meters of nature, whether that's a green space or a park or water. We're the country of thousands and thousands of lakes, and Helsinki, the capital where I live, is almost surrounded by shoreline. What that means is there's a possibility every day to go and do something that's not only good for mind and body, but also for the soul in terms of doing something, being active, getting outdoors, reconnecting with nature. And I think a lot of people feel unhappiness in a very digital modern world where they go from one air-conditioned home to another air-conditioned office by car in a very unnatural world. And I think the basics, you know, a swim in the sea or a lake, walking on a sandy beach, spending time in a forest or a park or a green area, those very simple things balance us as human beings. And I think that the closer you can be to them, or the more that you can incorporate even 15 minutes of spending time in a forest, going for a walk or a park, has been shown to reduce stress levels, help people deal with, you know, anxiety and depression. And also overall wellness, just connecting with nature and moving outdoors. So the long answer is that I think keeping things simple helps you make them more complicated. By that I mean is when you're in touch with the basics, with nature, a dip in the sea every day, which is something that I do, then helps me do other things that require a lot more energy, perseverance, and sisu.
Beautiful. And just a follow-up question to that. So it of course completely makes sense, like spending time in nature and maybe even slowing things down and just connecting to earthy things. But to what extent can it be helpful to do things that slightly challenge us, like jumping into a cold lake or taking a cold shower or going into a hot sauna? To what extent does that relate to sisu?
That's, again, another very good question. I think that that's the part of sisu is where, you know, it's like a mindset or a superpower a muscle that you flex. And the more that you push yourself to do things that you might at first feel not so certain about, something like the sauna is, most people in Finland are very familiar with it, and it's very much part of, for some people, daily life, if not weekly. But for someone who's not familiar with it, it does take a lot of sisu to tap into the courage to go and have a steam bath, a hot steam bath. You know, you're not quite sure what it's all about. How do you go and have a sauna? You know, do people wear a towel or their bathing suit or clothing? And then you realize that actually part of the beauty of the sauna, which has, again, many mental and physical benefits that have been well researched and documented, you know, from detox, you know, you sweat out all the toxins, you relax the muscles, the mind, the heart rate goes up, you know, you do both physical and mental things that have benefits, but you're also doing something that is pushing you slightly. The same thing goes, I think, for if we talk about cold water swimming. Again, there's a lot of research and data that shows that, you know, a 30-second to a minute dip in icy cold water, let's say during the winter months, when the water is 10 degrees Celsius or colder, sets off a hormone storm, or what's called the happy hormones. So all of the positive hormones that make us feel good, the oxytocin, the dopamine, and so on. And that is a really good example of finding your sisu or your resilience, because for a great many people, especially people who have not been brought up in that kind of a culture, it seems like a very odd thing to do, but also something that might be painful, or it might seem even a little bit crazy. But when you decide, okay, I'm going to give this a try, most people who then do that are absolutely surprised at how great they feel afterwards, because they have this swimmer's high and this rush of great, feeling really good. They've reset the mind and the body when they come out of the water. And then again, that's something that helps you get the courage or build up the sisu to then try other things that you might be leery of or think are too difficult or just sound odd and different. Does that answer your question?
Absolutely.
Good.
I wanted to ask you, Katya, when I looked up the definition of sisu, it said it's a unique Finnish concept, roughly meaning strength of will, determination, perseverance, acting rationally in the face of adversity, all these things. Now, these are all the qualities of a champion. This is like the champion's mindset. And this podcast is for athletes, not necessarily champions, but high performance athletes. But of course, some of those qualities can lead to the opposite, to stress and anxiety, etc. A strength of will, as an example. So when do you know that the time is to take stock, rejuvenate, rather than persevere and succeed at all costs?
Again, I think another really, really good question. And I think that is something that taps into, this is going to be a slightly more complicated answer because it's going to tap into a little bit of the Finnish, if I had to generalize about a national mentality. And one of the things that's very important is humbleness. Of not making a big deal about yourself, but also realizing, you know, that we are not me, meaning that we work together, you know, whether it's a sauna or, you know, politics or a great sporting event. It's not so much about the individual, but about the community. And I think on some level that can be very useful. Of course, there are examples of bad sisu, you know, when people really push themselves too hard to try to achieve, you know, the top spot or run or do something in a very excellent way. But I would say that when you accompany that, pair that with this idea of self-acceptance and of, you know, you're going to try your hardest, and that is actually the basis of sisu is, you know, you're not going to give up. You're going to try your hardest, but you're not sure if you're going to succeed. You're not sure. It's not about necessarily winning or getting the top prize. It's about doing your best before you say, okay, I give up. I'm not going to do something, or I'm not going to push through. So I think this notion of listening to yourself, but also listening to the greater whole and realizing that, for example, you're going to try to do something and you're really going to push yourself, but you're going to make sure you do it in a healthy way so that it doesn't put other people at risk. Let's say something as simple as you need to take care of a child. So it's not reasonable for you to do something very, very extreme if you feel that it's starting to bleed over into the edges of not being healthy anymore, you know, where it's going to push you too much or burn you out. And that is my rather complicated answer, that it is this pairing of humbleness and self-acceptance and of realizing, you know, that you're just, as a dentist recently told me, you know, we're just specks of dust in the universe. We're just here for a short time. And anybody who makes too big of a deal about themselves is already lost on the journey. And that kind of idea, I think, is really key to trying to not go overboard and maintain that humble resilience.
Nice.
I'm wondering, I'm looking at your expression, Keith, and wondering if I went off too far on a tangent.
No, not at all.
Would you like that more in a more simplified?
Not at all. In fact, you know, sometimes you have to give your brain a time to process the information. Yeah. So if there's a delay, that's for that actually is a good thing.
Good.
Katja, I have a follow-up question. So
sure.
Let's say we understand that hanging out in nature has a lot of benefits. And at the same time, looking at the reality of many of the, especially younger athletes, you know, many of them are teenagers. They're so drawn to their phones, to social media, to Instagram. And we hear of studies how that impacts our well-being and our levels of happiness. How would you advise them to connect more to Sisu habits and separate themselves a little bit from technology?
What I often say, I mean, I have a 12-year-old son, so I'm very versed in and every day it's a challenge to try to reduce the screen time, the digital time, and you know, get him outdoors and doing things and just participating in the real world rather than doing it via a screen. But I would say, especially for young athletes, but I would say actually this is something that faces, we all face this challenge, which is that we spend, most of us, I'm going to generalize hugely, but I most of us spend far too much time online in front of our screens, whether they're, you know, the digital, whether it's the iPhone we've got in our pocket or the screen or whatever. And one of the best ways to do that is to really try to set up some digital detox time. So it's like you either you put your phone on do not disturb, or you even actually leave it if it's safe to leave at home. So when you go out or you're training or whatever it is that you're doing, that you really build in these blocks of time where you're without your devices and you're offline. And set it up as a challenge to try to experience. I often say to my son, and he's probably going to be in therapy later on in life because of it, but you know, it's like, just experience the real world, like the here and the now. Don't take your phone or don't take it out for a little while. Don't take pictures. Don't Google anything. We'll do it later. We'll check that information later. But for now, just experience whatever this is, the park, the museum, the train ride, the outdoors, how does the water feel, whatever. So that again is, I think, almost, if you could call it, Sisu digital detox, you know, setting a challenge for yourself, whether it's half an hour or longer chunks of time, or even for some people who are really online and very, very busy, and they monitor a lot of their training and their physical health and other things, and they need to have their devices, just even 15 minutes just to go and sit on a park bench or stand under a tree or do something that suits your schedule, your lifestyle, and where you live, and see how it feels. Because sometimes it feels really, really great after you've gone offline, and then you realize, wait, I can do this. And that actually restored me and gave me much more energy to then go back online or to do all the digital stuff that I need to do. And that can be, I mean, that's the key really to building up resilience, is figuring out what works best for you and makes you stronger. And often it can be limiting those things that we're spending too much time on, and they're not nurturing us and making us feel better.
Interesting. It's funny because years ago they used to make fun of Prince Charles here because he used to talk to the plants. And I guess in some ways you're probably saying, actually, maybe he had it right in the first place. But that wasn't what I was going to ask you. athletes are, you know, certainly the high performance ones, they often experience a type of negative emotion based on external scrutiny, lack of on-field success, performance anxiety, etc. You obviously, I guess you're going to say yes, but do you think that applying the Sisu Finish concepts can lead a pro athlete to a more balanced mental state and well-being? Or is there more to it than that? And if so, what steps, extra steps, apart from connecting with nature, could you advise, you know, in order to near, get closer to that balanced state?
I think, yes, definitely, you can use this Sisu approach. You can use this idea of, you know, setting up, whether it's the digital detox or whatever, but also of being really aware of, it's just like, you know, when we hang out with some people, we feel really revitalized and energized and full of ideas and great. And then when we hang out with some people, we feel drained and we think, you know, I feel kind of, that was a bit toxic. And it's the same thing with, for example, let's say that you're a high profile athlete or anything else for that matter, but that you're under public scrutiny a lot. And, you know, the difference between following all the media coverage about yourself and Googling yourself and spending hours and hours online, or scrutinizing a photo of yourself that has appeared somewhere that you're not entirely happy with, and learning to just let it go, but also learning to, like a lot of literary writers don't read the reviews. They just have their agents tell them, you know, well, basically this person didn't like your book, or this person loved your book, or this was the constructive criticism. But as a way to build up their resilience, to protect themselves, they don't go towards the darkness. And by that, I mean, for example, if they're going to feel really awful after spending a lot of time online reading reviews of their own performance or comparisons or whatever it is, maybe it's even images that they don't like, to minimize that, you know, the same way that you try to spend more time with the people who give you energy and uplift you and less time with people who don't do that. You do those same practices in daily life. You become more aware and build up your resilience by minimizing, you know, the things that aren't really working for you. They're not making you feel very good. And again, that goes back to this humble concept too. You know, at the end of the day, everybody is so busy worrying about their own stuff that they don't have that much time to worry about your stuff. And even when they do, you know, that reality that it's okay, so maybe it's going to be a headline for, you know, a day, but then it's going to fade away and there's going to be a new headline. And so you keep moving on, you build that resilience, but you keep moving on as, you know, the speck of dust in the universe, as it were, rather than letting something take you over and in a negative way erode your mental or physical health.
Yes. And one of the things that you talk about, I think it's in your book actually, is this ability of reframing what you can't control. So relevant for elite athletes in that they can only control the controllables, excuse the cliche. They can't control their opponent, they can't control the crowd, the pitch, etc. How do you adopt this skill of reframing what you can't control?
I think that is something that does take time and life experience on some level. Although I have noticed that children sometimes too will be, they'll have all kinds of skills that they've learned, for example, at school with regards to bullying and anti-bullying, you know, behaviors to cope with it and how to shut it down, how to walk away and how to not let it get to you and how not to engage with bullies. So I think it's the same type of thing where you flex your sisu muscle, as it were. And okay, there are some things, and we all have them in our lives, in our professional lives, our personal lives, every element, you know, whether it's the neighbors, the city we live in, things you realize that some of them you can decide to fight, but a lot of them you can waste your energy railing against them and being angry. And some of them can't be changed so much, like the opinion of other people, for example, is a good one. And it's an absolute, usually often a waste of energy you want to put your energy elsewhere. Just like if you were a professional athlete, there are certain things you need to train and certain areas that you put your focus on because you simply can't do everything. You have to set, you know, goals and agendas and what is going to be today's practice, the key thing that we're going to work on, or the key five things, because we can't do 100 things. So this idea of reframing really, I think, again, is kind of bringing the universal down to the local and realizing, okay, there are some things that I can try to change, and I can be vocal, and I can try to move planets, as it were. But then there are some things that I can't, and it's actually better for me to just let it be, let it go. And I think that's part of the reframing process, where you make those conscious decisions, you know, about whether you're going to do 50 squats or 50 push-ups. And it's the same thing. Okay, there are some things that are just not really going in the direction that you want them to go into. So is it possible to focus on other areas?
And I know you talk about this other facet of Sisu, which is about an extraordinary ability for action when you've almost reached the end of your physical or mental ability. Now, again, this is another thing you hear about boxers who were knocked down, and then they said, like Tyson Fury, when he came up, it looked like he rose up from the dead. You see it in tennis matches. Nadal did it, for example, in the French Open, when he looked like he couldn't walk. It's like a second wind, I guess. Is this something we can practice, or is it just something we know we can trust is in there?
Very good question. I think some of it is actually you can practice it. And this goes back to a much, I think, older discussion is, you know, how many of these things are learned and trained and how many are innate. But I do think that if you know, from a young age, you've been encouraged and you have a team around you who supports you and tells you that the sky is the limit in terms of, you know, if you want to dream it, you can do it, you can try to do it. I do think that even when you're feeling completely spent and exhausted and the cards are down, there is that ability in people, in many, many people, to get up and to give it one more try, to keep going when they feel that they're completely exhausted. And I think it's the psychological and the physical, and it comes from a much longer line of positive psychology and of having been encouraged and been trained to use your physical resources, even when you think they're completely gone, completely depleted. And as opposed to having a more negative mindset where you think, I'm done, I can't do it. And that's something that you often hear just in people's everyday conversation. You know, there are people who are, well, I'll try. I think I can. I'd like to try. And then there are some people, oh, I can't. I can't. No, never going to try that. And that is a skill that I think if you don't train it, it's easy to be in the I can't camp for a lot of issues, you know, whether you're talking about sports or just life in general.
Katya, I want to shift gears a little bit. Yeah. So in the last year or two, more and more athletes came out and expressed how they're struggling mentally. From a Sisu point of view, what is going on? Why is it becoming so hard for young people to feel happy, and especially for athletes? Like, what are they missing in their lives? And I say this because often from the outside world, you know, like, people look up to athletes and say, I wish I could be one of those people.
My sense is that we're able to talk about these things more openly. Yes, there are definitely a great many things going on in the world, and the rise of mental health issues, you know, depression and anxiety, the rates are staggering. But when when people say, oh, as if it used to be better before, I think people suffered in silence before and we didn't talk about these things so much. So I don't see it as a positive thing that so many people are struggling with their mental health, but I see it as a positive thing that people who are in positions of power, and by that I mean, for example, a young elite athlete who has a great number of followers and people who are watching everything they do. I think it's setting a great example to say, hey, I've suffered too, you know, from mental health issues or depression or anxiety or whatever, you know, it might be something other than those. And I think that that gives a great amount of support to a lot of other people who suffer, because the reality is that it's not so uncommon to have mental health issues. And I think what makes it worse is when we don't talk about it and we pretend that it's somehow lesser than a physical illness and that it's something to be ashamed of. So I think this is kind of a two-edged sword, so to say, or a two-edged issue in that I think it's actually very good that we're talking about this. And I'm not sure that that necessarily means, yes, the numbers have increased, but also we're measuring mental health in a different way than we did 30 or 40 years ago, when really the way that we addressed mental health issues was very different and very much about secrecy and shame and a whole bunch of other things. But also we have so much more information that's available to a broader public just about how lifestyle impacts mental health. And these are things that we didn't so much talk about, you know, instead of just taking a pill, you know, talk therapy, you know, what are you eating? How are you moving? Do you have a social network? Do you have a support network? Do you have people to talk to? Are there people who understand you? Do you have people, or is there somebody who's bullying you? You know, all of these things can lead to mental health issues. And the increased awareness about what all of the factors that can impact mental health, and the fact that we're talking about it, I think is actually a positive thing.
So in terms of a high-performance athlete, just to sort of sum up, I guess, how would you encourage them, advise them to embrace this Sisu way of life, not only in their sporting goals, but their overall well-being? And I guess a combination of the two.
I would say that, and again, that's a bit of a tricky question in that somebody who, well, if we're talking about overall life, I think it's that being authentic, being honest, really trying to make sure that there's balance. And balance means different things to different people. You know, for some people, that means that they spend a lot of time offline and in nature and maybe connecting with friends or peers or whoever the people are that support them and make them feel loved, family. For some people, they are much happier spending more time, let's say, at the gym or training and less time in those environments. But I guess being aware of how it's possible to have balance in your life and looking at one's own life and seeing, you know, is there more of an opportunity? Would there be some activities that would help me rejuvenate, replenish, restore, rest, so that when I have to be high performance and on, I'm better able to perform? Because the reality is that human beings were not made to go 24/7. And we all, you know, we come from water. We come from many of the natural elements. And I think when we lose contact with those totally, we don't feel so well.
Great. Katja, this was really very, very fascinating. And I think our audience is really going to be inspired by the Sisu way. Where can people learn more from you if they want to go deeper into the Sisu lifestyle?
That's a good question. Well, I think the books are available, of course, The Finnish Way, which I think now has been translated into 23 different languages. And Everyday Sisu, which just came out, is available in English in most parts of the world. And that has also, it's being translated into Japanese and Thai. And I think there was another language right now as we speak. Possibly the best place just to follow me is my name, Katja Panzar, on Instagram. And I often post. Right now I've been a little bit on a little bit of a digital break, But I do post things that relate to CISU, all things CISU, my work, if I'm interviewed, or there's some new research, or even just something simple about, you know, five ways to get your child offline, or if you want to try winter swimming, five tips for how to do it in a safe way.
It's interesting. Awesome. And I know many of those things are being embraced by other well-known proponents of the Finnish way, you know, the cold water dipping and et cetera, et cetera. But I think it's interesting because many professional athletes, you would say, they probably don't even think about going to the local park, the local lake, etc. They may be at a training camp. If you're a boxer, you may be in camp, in the gym all day. If you're a tennis player, you're traveling to the next tournament. But I guess the message is loud and clear. You've got to make time for yourself and nature and get back to some kind of, I guess, coming back to yourself is the answer, and coming back to nature, which we're all part of. Listen, it's been fascinating talking to you, and I'm going to spend more time doing some of the tips, some of the things that you've given us and our listeners. We're just very grateful to have you on, and thank you very much.
Thank you. And I think you beautifully summed up exactly what the message is.
Do head over to the Thrive website. That's www.thrive, spelt THR, the digit one, VE.space, where you can sign up for further giveaways and, of course, tips. That's www.thrive, spelt THR1VE.space. After all, this is your space to thrive.